This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning across America. We check in for our weekly get-together here on the Saturday morning show. Max Armstrong and I will be with you until 6 o'clock this morning here on WGN Radio. And as I said earlier, talking to Matt, we're going to hear directly from the new Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue. I have yet to meet the new Secretary, but Max indeed did meet him and talk to him at the Washington Watch Farm Broadcasters Gathering earlier this week in our nation's capital. So we have that coming up. The milk war is still a topic of conversation between Canada and the United States, and we'll talk to John Onken about that. And we'll take a look at the impact of weather on the planting season as we now are a week into the month of May and the rain continues to fall over much of the midsection where we produce our corn and our soybeans. But as always, good to have you along with us on this Saturday morning, and John Onken standing by on the line, and we'll check in with him when we continue on the Saturday morning show. John Onken, longtime friend in the dairy industry in Wisconsin, now publisher of the Agri-Dairy Business Letter, joins us today on the Saturday morning show because it's been a while since we've talked dairy with John, and boy, there's a lot going on. Milk wars with Canada and all sorts of things. So, John, never a dull moment for you in the dairy industry, is it?
Well, this has been the most probably interesting and dynamic month I've ever remember in my many years in the dairy industry. It's, you know, we were both raised on farms, and nobody ever worried about finding a place for your milk.
Right.
You just added cows, you changed dairies if you wanted to, and it was always somebody there. That didn't happen as of May 1st, and it's been a shock to, I think, all of the dairy industry.
I would guess it not only affects the farmers who were shut off, but any other farmer producing milk has got to take a look at that and say, wow.
What am I going to do if I can't sell my milk? That is a... It's not like somebody working in a company or for a government and getting fired and losing a job. If you can't sell your milk, you probably don't even eat because all of your income comes from the sale of milk. And if you can't find somebody, you've got cows to feed, bills to pay, and that's what the fear has been for the last month.
So what has happened?
The original crisis has started when Grassland Dairy Products at Greenwood, Wisconsin, sent a letter out a month ago that they had lost a Canadian contract for what's called ultra-filtered milk. And most people have never heard of that before. It's a process where they use a membrane system and break the milk into pieces by the different size of the particle. So what they were doing is removing the fat and removing some of the water and sending, leaving the protein in the milk, selling the protein as a low a concentrated milk into Canada, which they use to add the cheese to make cheese. Canadians cut that off. The reasons are a little bit unclear, but the Grassland Dairy Products sent notes to about 70 farmers that after May 1st, their milk would not be picked up anymore. And since then, it's been kind of a mess.
Well, we're several days past the 1st of May. What are these farmers doing? Have they found a place to sell their milk?
There's never been a list published, and I'm not sure anybody knows other than Grassland, but apparently all of them have found a home, or they keep talking about two or three that hadn't, but I'm not sure what is happened to them, if they're going to quit farming or retire or what. But by and large, the problem seems to be solved, because half a dozen or eight different dairy processors have decided to take the milk from all of them except one or two. And some are small cheesemakers, some are large companies. I think the last one was Dairy Farmers of America, which is the nation's largest dairy cooperative. And they signed contracts apparently from 6 months to a year in length with the last eight or ten dairies. So at the moment, it seems like everybody's pretty happy.
But I guess it would be a combination of economics. They didn't have a market for the product anymore in Canada, and politics. And it's been interesting to see the reaction now. Poultry and egg producers in the United States are saying, well, we're not treated very well by the Canadians. We better work on that on NAFTA. And even grain producers along the northern border are saying Canadian grain has an advantage over our grain coming in. So this could really open up the whole NAFTA discussion, couldn't it?
Well, President Trump had talked about tariffs and exports even before he was elected. And it happened to be that he was visiting Wisconsin soon after this milk cutoff happened. And I guess he got really involved in it, and he's been doing some things on lumber tariffs and what have you, and he's into the system to change it. And you and I have been around government long enough to know that I don't understand what's happening on these tariffs. We don't know. They were made years ago. NAFTA is a long time ago. And I don't know the details. I don't know how they're going to do it, but it's kind of like a fight when you're little kids. You don't know what you're fighting about, but you're fatting each other with something and you're trying to get the upper hand, and I don't know how this is going to come out. You're right. Everybody's excited about this. I mean, worried about this.
Yeah,
dairy farmers who've been sending to long-time processors are worried that what if they lose a contract? Are they going to lose their market?
Yeah. One other question I have, and this comes from city people every once in a while. I can answer it, but I don't know if they understand it. But every once in a while, I'll get a call from a city listener who says, you know, if there's not a market for the milk, why do farmers keep on producing it? Don't they have to make sure there's a market there before they produce it? What's your response to that, John?
Well, there's always been a market. And strangely enough, even while we're short of markets for milk, there are three or four large dairies that are going to be built in Wisconsin. The old saying always was that high milk prices mean farmers expand and raise more milk, and low milk prices mean that farmers expand and produce more milk. It's
right.
Life. It's the way it is. And you can't immediately get rid of a farm, let's say that it has 100 cows or 500 cows, tomorrow. It takes a long time and a lot of planning to make a change. And farmers have always produced milk. I think there's a lot of serious thinking now about should there be a limit on how much milk a farmer produces.
Well, and
that'll be another discussion.
Yeah, that leads to a big other discussion. Finally, did I see that we're now below 10,000 in the number of dairy farms in Wisconsin?
Yes, we are. We have lost a ton of farms. In 2000, 17 years ago, there were 20,715 dairies, and the 1916 figure, the last figure we have, is 9,520, and actually since the first of the year, I think we're down to about 9,200 now. So that's a loss of 12,000 farms since 2000, and we're going out every day that our farms are leaving.
Before I leave you this morning, John, let's talk about the Agri-Dairy Business Letter. What is it, and how can people get on the mailing list?
Well, it's a newsletter that I started many years ago for people who worked with dairy farmers. And I didn't send it. It's a subscription newsletter. You must pay for it.
Yep.
And I only sold it to people who supplied farmers. And I made the mistake of sending a complimentary copy to Orion Samuelson on WGN. And he would quote it. And then farmers said, I want to get that newsletter. And I didn't want to sell them to them because talking to the suppliers is a bit different than talking to the dairy farmers themselves. But some friends of mine kept insisting they get it, so I finally opened it up to them. And I produce it every other week. I try to explain what's happening in the dairy business.
And you do a very good job of it. And where do they get in touch with you? Is there a website or where?
No, I don't have a website. I just basically have an email or a telephone
Okay. call. All right. Well, John, always a pleasure to talk to you. We've done it for years and years and years, and I'm glad you're continuing to watch the dairy industry and that we can work together on just one segment of agriculture. And we hope that we don't lose too many more dairy farms because, as you said, you and I both grew up on dairy farms, and that's kind of sad to see it happen. So thank you for joining me this morning, and we'll be in touch a little bit later.
Thank you, Arjen.
John Onken, publisher of the Agri-Dairy Business Letter. He watches the dairy industry from his headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, here with us on the Saturday Morning Show. Well, we're at about 24 minutes past 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning. More rain falling across our corn soybean areas of the Midwest, and a little bit later we'll talk to Jerry Goodell with the Price Group about the impact of weather at planting time, the kind of a season that we're looking at so far, but we're just 1 week into May. Speaking of rain showers, I'm hoping it'll stay dry across the lake because today is the final day for the Blossom Time Festival. That's the annual event over in southwestern Michigan where they salute the orchard industry because the climate off Lake Michigan in southwestern Michigan is very conducive to the growth of orchards. And they've added to that vineyards. There is now a wine industry in southwest Michigan. But every year, for who knows how long, I've attended it. I've lost track of the number of times I've been a part of Blossom Time over the years. But it's always a great event, 24 communities that come together to promote agriculture and invite city folks to come out and enjoy the blossoms in the orchards at Blossom Time. Today at 1 o'clock Michigan time, the Grand Floral Parade will occur, and that's always a colorful event and a lot of fun. So good morning across the lake in Michigan, and have a great day for this year's Blossom Time Festival. This week, some changes were made and announced for the 2017 Illinois State Fair. The announcement made by the Director of Agriculture for Illinois, Ray Poe, and State Fair Manager Kevin Gordon. And they announced this week that changes outlined in the 2017 Illinois State Fair Joint Livestock Open and Junior Premium Book will allow for more youth exhibitors to receive prize money at the Governor's Sale of Champions. That, of course, is one of the highlights every year at the Illinois State Fair. And here is the new formula created for the 2017 Illinois State Fair on how the money will be awarded. And you may want to follow up on this because you can do it in the State Fair Premium Book and you can get full information on the changes being made in how the money is divided at the Sale of Champions on the Tuesday night of the fair. So here are the rules now. 50% of the auction funds will go to the youth exhibitor of the Grand Champion. 15% will go to the exhibitor of the reserve grand champion. 15% will be divided evenly among the exhibitors of other breed champions in that class. And then 10% in the name of the buyer to the Illinois 4-H Foundation, and 10% to the Illinois FFA Foundation to promote livestock programs. Now, you may recall, before, 80% of the auction funds went to the youth exhibitor of the grand champion, with the remaining 20% split equally among Illinois 4-H Foundation and Illinois FFA. But this move, while still awarding a significant amount of money to the youth exhibitor of the overall grand champion, opens the door to honor the achievements of other young exhibitors who earn the right to compete at the sale of champions. There are a couple of other rule changes for the Illinois State Fair Livestock Show this year, and it has to do with the use of drugs. The changes include allowing off-label drugs prescribed by a licensed veterinarian if the exhibitor discloses that at check-in to the fair. Previously, the presence of an off-label drug would result in disqualification. And the other rule change, releasing a list of drugs that, if found in the animal system, would result in a higher penalty assessed to the exhibitor. So those changes you'll want to make note of, and the Illinois State Fair Premium Book is now available online. Copies of the annual publication will soon be available at the Illinois State Fair Administration Office in Springfield. Dates for this year's Illinois State Fair are August 10 through August 20 in Springfield, Illinois. And you know what? That will be here before you know it, because it's moving right along here as we go through the 2017 crop year. Coming up, of course, will be June Dairy Month, and that means June Dairy Month Breakfast on the Farm. A week ago, you may recall, we talked to Ben Bransel, who is the director of the Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Wisconsin, and he said they could have upwards of 60 to 70 June Dairy Month Breakfasts on the Farm this year, which makes a very busy June. And many of those breakfasts, if they're fairly close to urban areas, will feed a dairy farm breakfast to 3,000, 4,000, or 5,000 people. So once again, you can find out where the June Dairy Month breakfasts are going to be located and when by going to the website of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture. And come on out to the dairy farm and see what life is like and what they do to produce a quality, safe, nutritious product. So that's coming up. And, of course, Harvard Milk Day, we hope to be there for that this year. And so it goes. We're approaching news time here on WGN Radio. And when we come back, well, we'll talk markets with Jerry Goodell, and Max will visit with the Secretary of Agriculture on Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGNRadio.com. Well, thank you very much, Roger, and I hope those showers keep moving eastward and east of southwestern Michigan for the big grand floral parade at the Blossom Time Festival later today. But welcome back to the Saturday Morning Show, where it's time for Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, and this week, paying tribute to an agricultural friend who we lost earlier this year. It's that time of year again, time to tackle some difficult tasks like cleaning those appliances. And you don't want to forget your most treasured appliance, the coffee maker. Wink Products Coffee Maker Cleaner is the perfect cleaning solution to remove those nasty mineral deposits that make coffee taste metallic and cause your coffee maker to clog. So pick up Wink Coffee Maker Cleaner today and see what a difference it makes. Learn more at WHINK.com. I'm continuing my recovery from leg bypass surgery that happened back on the 1st of March, and it happened in Scottsdale, Arizona at the Mayo Clinic. So it's getting better, and it will get me back very soon, I'm hoping. I'm sorry I'm missing the opening at Arlington or the Derby Day at Arlington today. That's always an annual event. But since that's in Arlington Heights, Illinois, and I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona, going to be a little tough to do that one. But I do want to talk about one of the things that happened in my absence, and that is the loss of a dear friend, personally and professionally, and a friend, I think, to agriculture. We lost Clayton Yeider this spring. He passed away after a battle with cancer. And Clayton really made a mark in the world of agriculture. I want to share just a couple of stories with him because he was a Nebraska farm boy, came out of Nebraska, and eventually became Secretary of Agriculture. But before that, he was the special trade representative that was involved in a great deal of agricultural activity. And going back to the 1980s, when he was special trade representative, he was ordered by the president to go to Japan, see if we couldn't open that market to American beef, because Japanese consumers loved American beef, and there's not much beef production in Japan, but the government wanted to protect those beef producers, and so it was impossible to get American beef. So I vividly remember going with then Special Trade Representative Clayton Yeider to Tokyo, sitting in this huge room, a long table in the room with the Japanese negotiators on one side, Clayton Yeider and the American negotiators on the other side. I am having a challenge understanding what's being said, but everybody seems to be fairly happy with what's happening, smiles on their faces. And after the session ended, we came out of the room. I said to Clayton, I said, man, it looks like we made some progress and got some things. I said, everybody seemed to be in a good mood. And I said, the Japanese negotiators were smiling and you were smiling. And he said, yeah, but I have to tell you, I was smiling through gritted teeth. Well, that was Clayton. And ultimately, that meeting in Tokyo did open the Japanese market for American beef producers. But he was an excellent Secretary of Agriculture, trade representative, and certainly now a loss to American agriculture. Clayton Yeider. That's Samuelson Says, a presentation of the Tribune Radio Network. And coming up, we're going to talk markets. Max Armstrong will be talking to Jerry Goodell when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Jerry Goodell, Price Group, account executive, joining us here to analyze what's been going on in the markets. Farmers must be saying, don't they know? Don't they have an idea what's going on out here?
Oh, definitely. The weather last week was the first freeze in the north central part of the state. Now we end up having the blizzard to hit the western third of the state. This tipped over the heading wheat, and how much is snapped off? Where's it going to be? We're in the midst of trying to determine that with the Kansas wheat tour this week. And at the same time, what's the USDA going to come up with next week with their monthly report, which is going to have some delayed reaction because of the fact that it happened so close to their report?
Which I guess brings up the question, too. Why does it take so long sometimes to generate USDA reports? Why can't they come out with a little more speed?
That there's always been that question that comes along. The combination of their own people going out and taking a look at the crop, also getting the information back from the producer on the producer survey portion of the thing, accumulating that at the states, and then bringing it up to the to the USDA type situation, because that would, the best would be able to get this to them as early next week. That'd be Monday, so they could have it ready for Wednesday. So that's part of the issue that's going on here, is that. But at the same time, I'm not sure anybody that's going to, even a good agronomist at this point, have a good feel until we get a chance to see what responds out of this weather. Do we have hot weather that really puts the stress on it? Do we continue to have cool weather that helps try to mend the issues? Those are all the issues that impact any crop estimate in wheat.
The weather premium was put in quickly, and it was drained out rather.
Yeah, it backed off a little bit the short term here. I think it's still going to be a very viable situation going on. The issues in the U.S. and then on a worldwide basis, I think next week's numbers on both wheat and corn, as we look at the USDA's world numbers, are going to start to show both corn and wheat to start to bring back these heavy numbers on a worldwide basis. Will they take them to the stratospheric issues? No. But they're going to at least build the process on being able to take away some of these heavy world stocks that have been really kind of overbearing in both those markets.
What other places in the world will be responsible for shrinking stocks?
Well, and on the wheat side of things here, we're going to have some reduced Canadian numbers this year because they had a great crop last year. Same thing in Australia. Europe had a kind of a shaky crop last year. They might be rebound. We're kind of up and down about where Russia's going to be in Ukraine and the Black Sea. They had a respectable crop. That's the reason why the U.S. crop and its significance of setting back here with a huge decline in winter wheat plantings. We know that's already there. If we go back to more traditional yields, last year's stratospheric 56 bushel, whatever the heck it was, nationwide yield was just unbelievable. So we get back into more normal yields, and that's where the positive, we could come up with 25 million metric tons right there.
So the big reaction, we must remember, is based in part on significantly lower wheat acreage in the United States. We have to remember this is a much smaller wheat belt.
Oh, hugely. The march of corn and soybeans westward is quite impressive. It continues to go on here. And that's the reason why the surprising thing is that where this snow was at was probably one of our last best deals for wheat production in this U.S. It's the western part of Kansas on into Oklahoma and parts of western Nebraska, maybe.
Help us to understand, those of us not in that wheat-producing area, how close was this crop to being made?
I'd have to say probably with no particular adverse weather in that, we could have a swing factor of 100 million bushels difference between the final and where it could have been and where it might be. It's hard to really say, but it's a significant factor in how much better the crop could have been if we didn't have this adverse weather.
Planting delays for corn and soybean acreage, but certainly corn. How worried is the trade about this? I mean, we've seen amazing progress in windows of opportunity.
Yes. The one thing that's been really kind of surprising has been the ability of the Eastern Corn Belt to sneak in here and get some acreage planted. Illinois was good 2 weeks ago. They started strong this last week. Indiana was very strong this last week. We're keeping up with the so-called five-year average, but the significance of the fact is that the areas in north here, across the northern, north and South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, way behind. And that's an important part of this Corn Belt because that's where a lot of the expansion's been and where some of our best yields have been the last few years. And so it's getting in late. That's another factor why this 170 and above yields might not be as good this year.
But now, overall, corn acreage, really, the planting progress is not that much behind average.
No. It's just because it's been centered on the eastern part of the U.S., and throw in Missouri a little bit, too, and that Illinois is 65%, 40% in both Indiana and also Ohio. And Iowa is like 28 or 30%. Those four states have really carried the load.
Temperatures have been cool. Is that worrisome as well?
Definitely. That's the reason why this northern areas of the Corn Belt have not been planting. Why people assume, well, it's not raining, they must be planting. Well, the soil temperatures are at 45 degrees. People do not want to put it in there. Or if they think it's going to end up raining on cool soils, that's not good. We know that shocks the seed.
Are we going to see much market reaction, though, at all until we fall significantly behind planting progress?
Actually, next week could be it, because this week we're not getting much progress, northern belts or here in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, because of the rains we just had this last weekend. So the next week could be the first one we've actually projected and actually may have something less than normal. Because this is traditionally this week and next week are your 20% jumps. I don't see a 20% jump in either week.
What kind of a gap is it going to take to fall behind to really bring the market to life? 10 percentage points, 20 percentage points to really bring a reaction?
10 or 15. But the key thing is we also need some numbers next week on the world numbers to help put them together. The world numbers are going to, in the beginnings of next year's crops, both corn and wheat, we're likely to see the carryover stocks at least moving towards respectability. No 2.2 billion worth of carryover in corn. We could be under 2 on for next year's corn. The wheat number that's been 1.15 could be maybe 900. That's going the right way. At least we're going the right way. The key thing is giving some positive news on a longer-term basis.
Thanks, Jerry. Good to talk to you.
Thank you for having me as always, Max.
Jerry Goodell with the Price Group, talking markets with Max here on the Saturday Morning Show. Max has had a busy week, and we'll find out what else has been going on when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Well, Max Armstrong has always been a busy fella, and he's been part of our family at WGN for decades. But he's even busier this year because he also serves as president of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. And this week, it took him to Washington, D.C. to preside over an annual event for farm broadcasters called Washington Watch, where we have the opportunity to talk to legislators and staff members at USDA and learn about what's happening agriculturally. So let's catch up quickly on what Max observed in Washington. Good morning, Max.
Well, good morning, Orion. Sonny Perdue has been on the job at the USDA less than 2 weeks now. In that period of time, he's already traveled to the Kansas City area, and then yesterday he was in Iowa. In between, he met with us in Washington earlier this week, as I helped lead a delegation of farm broadcasters to our Washington Watch annual event of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. As you visit with Sonny Perdue, you're struck by the fact that he is folksy. He's friendly. He's genuine. And it doesn't take long to realize how experienced he is, not just in the world of agriculture, but also in government, too. Because, as he put it, he took this 8-year sabbatical to help run the state of Georgia, where 5 of the 8 years he was governor, they were trying to cut the budget in the state of Georgia. And the question came up to him the other day about a 21% budget cut proposed by Donald Trump for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Perdue responded by saying,
"Our farmers would love more money. You know, it's not there right now. We'd love four, and we love that $4 and $5 corn. It's not there right now. So what do? They do what it takes to manage, and that's what we're going to do at the USDA. So I'd love to have more money, but frankly, I don't want to kick a $20 trillion debt to my grandchildren either. And by golly, I applaud somebody will take this thing and say, as a United States government, let's do what it takes to get this budget under control, to get this deficit under control, where we can thrive. I believe the tax policy the president has coming are going to just kick off jobs and grow this economy, and hopefully we can have more money in the future to do all the things we need to do."
And about those matters that really matter, as far as Sonny Perdue sees it, trade is a key one.
You just need to know I'm a grow it and sell it kind of guy. We've got some producers out here that can just, they knock it out of the park growing it. And that's a great thing. Think about living in a country that would have to be dependent on other countries to feed you. And we're so blessed in that regard. So if these guys and gals can grow it, I'm going to do my best to sell it. So obviously trade is right up there.
And as he visited with members of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, Sonny Perdue also said farm labor, the immigrant workforce, is high on his list of priorities, too.
The president expressed in that farmers' town hall meeting the other day, that round table, that what he's after is the criminal element of illegal immigration. He understands they're dedicated farm workers out here who are immigrants, who are sometimes milking cows 365 days a year, not just seasonal workers. And he wants to find a way that we can use the productive capacity of those people who are here to serve agriculture.
And as he talked with us there at the USDA, Sonny Perdue shared how he views his life leading up to this point, how his career has progressed.
Max, I sort of feel like my life history has kind of brought me to this point. Obviously, growing up on a diversified row crop farm, a dairy farm as well, having graduated from veterinary school at the University of Georgia, a little Air Force experience, and then being in agribusiness since 1976 at our home there, and really in the grain trade. And so had a little sabbatical in Atlanta, 8 years being governor of Georgia, so you got a little bit of experience that way. So it's been a culmination, and many of my friends said, why do you want to do this at your stage of life? I believe when you're tapped on the shoulder and from a service standpoint, I'm the kind of guy that says salutes and says, put me in, coach.
Sonny Perdue, who at the age of 70 has done a lot in the area of agriculture. He grew up on a farm near Bonair, Georgia. That's on down south of Atlanta, south of Macon a little ways. And he knows what it's like to milk cows the way you do, Orion. And he's been a grain dealer. He's been a veterinarian. And yeah, he was governor of the state of Georgia for a while. Oh, yeah, I asked him about his dad's Farmall tractor, and he still has it. It is an International 686 that his father had, and it was restored a few years ago. And I know it's a strange story, but I actually drove Sonny Perdue's Farmall through one of the suburbs of Atlanta quite a few years ago during a morning rush hour, too, I might add. But that's another story for another day. Speaking of tractor rides, we have one coming up. For many, many years, we did the Heritage Tractor Adventure, focused around the city of Morris. We went all the way down that Heritage Corridor. Well, this year, Mary Beth DeGruche, who worked on that ride, I think all of the years we had it, basically, is putting together a ride for us that will be focused right in that Morris area. The dates are June 9th, 10th, and 11th, and it's going to be a great ride. We'll be in Morris, around the Morris area, going out to Gardner, going to Coal City. We'll be in Marseilles for a part of that ride, too. We're looking forward to it. You can get more information by emailing Mary Beth. Her email address is mbd52@aol.com. Or you could message me on Twitter if you want to, or email me. You can reach me on Twitter. I'm there, where you can follow my tweets if you care to, at Max Armstrong on Twitter. You can email me, max@agbizweek.com, and I'll get you in touch with Mary Beth, or you can email her directly, mbd52@aol.com. Orion, great to join you this morning. We look forward to having you back in action on an even more regular basis on our television show here soon. We hope you have a good Saturday.
Well, the same goes to you, Max. And yes, I am doing what I can with the help of the Mayo doctors to get this leg bypass surgery healed and get me back on my feet. But for the moment, at least another 3 weeks, the doctors say, before I can fly because of the treatment that's now being applied. But thanks to all of you for sending your prayers and your get-well wishes during what turned out to be a very surprise trip to Arizona. Gloria and I were coming out in February to spend 10 days, and I've been here ever since, but working on getting back, and certainly getting back in time for Harvard Milk Days, the first weekend of June. Sorry that today I will miss Derby Day at Arlington Park, but you're going to have a lot of fun out there. Or if you're going over to Michigan, you'll enjoy the Blossom Time Festival Parade. So thank you for joining us here. It's always a pleasure, and our thanks to Bob Ferguson, who does a good job of spinning the dials and getting Max together from Washington and getting me together from Arizona with all of you here on WGN. Chicago's very own WGN 720 Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.